If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Friday afternoon. Welcome. I'm glad you're listening. A lot of people up and down Michigan Avenue today. A lot of Lionel Messi jerseys ahead of the big Copa America soccer game tonight at Soldier Field. So that's certainly fun. If you have thousands of dollars, it's just as hot a ticket as Hamilton, I think. Andrea Haynes is in the studio. She's the editor for Blue Sky Innovation. Now, you're going to go to, you would choose Hamilton, or would you choose the soccer game tonight?
And I'm going, so I'm super excited.
Wait, you're going to Hamilton?
I'm going to Hamilton.
You have your tickets already?
I have tickets for the Broadway production of Hamilton.
Oh, you have any left?
Pretty excited.
Happy for you. It's not quite the same show, but Shark Tank is coming to Chicago.
Shark Tank is coming. Also a fun show about a lot of money. There have been some good Chicago companies on Shark Tank in the past, and they are coming to Chicago to look for more talent. They're having an open casting call in town on Monday.
Have they been here before?
They have. There's been a number of companies that have appeared on Shark Tank and done well. That includes Luminade, which is the lanterns. I think you know about those.
Right.
Spikeball, hot product for summer.
Can I tell you, I know the guys who... Did I tell you this before?
No.
I don't know directly, but through families, the guys who invented that game. And we had a graduation party last weekend for my son, and the Spikeball was the huge hit. I mean, it's all
really
over the place.
Off. Yeah. Just in a couple years, really.
Right, exactly.
It's become a hot thing. So it was on Shark Tank. And one I don't want to talk in too depth about, but Dude Wipes was another Chicago.
Yeah, that's
company.
Good to know. Okay, we'll just let that one slide by.
Yeah.
Let's talk flower trucks as well, because I really like this idea. Flowers for Dreams, I know I've had those guys on the show, right? Are they the company that designate a charity?
Yes.
Some of the money goes to charity?
Exactly. Stephen Dime is the founder and CEO, and they have... You know, they do hipster bouquets, and they're also one of these socially conscious businesses.
I should have really got the answer to my own questions before, but I think they're the company that started at high school graduations. Are they new Trier guys, do you know?
They might be.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. I shouldn't bring that up if I'm not sure. They now have a flower truck, which fascinates me because we're all about restaurant trucks, or food trucks, I should say, in the city. Why not a flower truck?
Yeah, and as I'm sure you remember, there was a lot of fighting about getting the legislation for, you know, getting permission for food trucks to operate. And there was apparently a law dating back to the 1940s in Chicago banning flower carts from back in the day.
We did a lot of banning, didn't we?
Like there was
food
a lot of
carts
banning.
And, yeah.
Yeah, so now they're unbanned, so Flowers for Dreams now has a flower truck and is hoping, of course, that there'll be more flower trucks, flower carts, kind of would add to the urban environment.
Okay, tricky thing, though, right? Because you know people are going to eat lunch at lunchtime. You don't necessarily know when or where people are going to be to buy flowers.
Yeah, I would imagine you might have to use some Twitter to make that work really well and... You know, target people when they want them. They actually said that they operated outside of the building that houses Groupon and Light Bank and some other tech companies and had a really successful day out there. And, you know, just impulse purchase, a $15 bouquet. There you have it.
So where do they go? $15, and I think the more expensive ones are $30.
Exactly.
And they were at, I would imagine Mother's Day was huge.
Yeah, Mother's Day they kind of took as a rollout occasion, as you might imagine.
And so... There was pushback for food trucks because they didn't want the food trucks too close to restaurants or things like that. Now, I know that Flowers for Dreams said they're going to try. I don't know if they said they won't compete with bricks and mortar flower shops, but they also don't want to compete at farmers markets with people providing them their flowers.
Exactly. There's always some tension between the existing businesses, which you can understand. If you're paying for a brick and mortar location, you don't want someone zipping up and taking, you know, skimming off all
right.
your business. So they'll have to find a way to find locations to operate. You know, where they're not doing that. And certainly they don't want to compete with the very people that are supplying the flowers that they're selling.
So a flower truck coming maybe to a farmer's market or an area near you. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, as it continues to expand. They want to go to other markets as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. I like the idea. Blue Sky had an interview with the person who is in charge of social media for NASA.
We did. This was an unusual opportunity for us. Obviously, we are more of a local publication, but he was in town from Silicon Valley to speak at a conference, and we thought, what is kind of more cool than talking to the guy who runs social media for NASA, which you may or may not know, but they have 500 social media accounts. They post tons. They have astronauts posting dispatches and photos from space. All kinds of accounts that are showing really cool stuff that the world has never gotten a chance to see before.
I love the quote from the man. He said, look, when he was trying to get astronauts to begin to tweet, he says, throughout history, we as a species have been looking up. Now there are humans constantly looking down on Earth, and that's a perspective that only astronauts can share. And we do get a lot of tweets from astronauts, right? They pretty much picked up
there
on
are,
that.
There are, yeah. You can see the photos, and I think they, you know, like probably in every industry, everyone's a little bit, you know, social media, what? Why would I do that? And then you start posting awesome photos from space and getting great feedback, and suddenly you understand you're bringing this to the world in a really more direct way.
And so there's that. There's the coolness of it, but there's also just the craft of it, because he's got to be taking what scientists are writing and making it so that I can understand it.
Which we certainly understand. You know, at Blue Sky, we feel like that's what we do, and I'm sure in many businesses, anyone that does social media, right, you're taking, you know, sort of high-level stuff with science. You know, they're dealing with aerospace, right? And the scientists that are tweeting, you know, or providing content for them maybe are on a little bit of a different plane, literally and figuratively. So they, you know, they want to translate it into a way that we can all kind of consume it and enjoy it.
And the idea then, too, about he's doing this about, he's trying to make it sort of sex it up for us, make it alluring, but he's also dealing with the government, which I would imagine would make it difficult from time to time.
Exactly. And, you know, again, I keep saying this, but it's like things we all deal with social media, right? You kind of want to be human and show your opinions and show, you know, what your thoughts are and your own observations. But in this case, as a government agency, they have to be a little bit tighter. They don't want to be viewed as endorsing products or, you know, ranting about things or anything
right.
like that. So it's like teaching people to be conversant, but maybe not to go too far.
To be entertaining without being very interesting.
Yeah, maybe that's it. It's a tough line.
You can check it out. There's a lot more about that at Blue Sky Innovation at the Chicago Tribune. Andrea Haines, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks,
great
Steve.
To see you again. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. When we come back, we're going to talk about wellness programs in the office. You know, those are the big things, and they're greatly expanding. How do you do one that actually appeals to your workers and gets results? We'll kick that around. Ian Scher will be here in the second half hour. He writes for CNET and is on the program from time to time. We're going to talk to him about the impact Netflix is having on your sex life. You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand on a Friday afternoon. How you feeling? Well, your boss wants you to feel better, or maybe he or she wants to save money on you. And so more often than not, we're seeing these employee wellness programs coming into the workplace. 79% of employers offer wellness resources and information. Adam Ochstein is in the studio, back in the studio to talk about that. Adam, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me back again, Steve.
When a boss introduces a wellness program to us, is it because he cares?
Come on, we're all capitalist pigs, you know that. We don't really care. It's all about saving money. But this is one of the few times where a business is actually aligned with actually doing something good and also saving money, right?
Right. So you can be a capitalist pig and care at the same time.
Exactly. 80% of our healthcare cost dollar goes towards lifestyle. Right. You know, if you look at what we spend on premium and healthcare costs,
right,
80 cents of every dollar is controllable healthcare. Diabetes, heart disease, lung cancer, all these types of lifestyle choices that we make actually could be, literally ripped out of our healthcare.
Are controlled.
Yeah.
We could control them ourselves.
Yeah. So if you have a wellness program that is tied to, you know, you eat well, you have good lifestyle, you know, there's an alignment there with the business.
Does a business owner actually see the benefit in his insurance or her insurance if these things are met?
Over time, yes.
Okay.
Right? You know, depends on how big your group is. You know, the insurance carriers are going to spread across the wealth and pull it together.
Right.
But, yeah, over time, absolutely. One of the side benefits people don't think about is also absenteeism. Right?
So good point.
People who are healthy don't get sick. They come to work, they have high energy, and they work a little bit better.
So it's not just savings when it comes to insurance money. It's also having people in the seats to do the job.
Absolutely.
So we've been presented with them from time to time, and sometimes I view them as penalties. Like, you know, people who smoke have to pay extra.
Right.
And it seems to me like that's no way to incentivize good health.
Well, people who speed and drive usually have to pay extra on car insurance too, right?
If they get caught.
If they get caught.
Right, okay.
Or if they get a lot of car accidents. So I think there should be some alignment between lifestyle and how one pays on healthcare, especially if you contribute 80 cents of the dollar is lifestyle driven.
So what you've got to do is jack up the cost on everyone and then reduce it on the people who
don't smoke, right?
So what do you think are the benefit or the what sort of tips would you have for people if they want to introduce this? What are the do's and don'ts?
Well, the do's would be gamify it, right? We're all kids at heart. So if you turn it into a game where, you know, you get points or, you know, you have constant communication, you gamify it a bit, you make it where it's fun and exciting, and you don't just say that the only way you're going to participate is if you participate in our healthcare, we're going to, give you access to wellness. Or if...
I mean, so you don't have to necessarily be getting insurance through the company.
Exactly.
To participate in the program.
Yeah. In addition, you know, last Friday would have been a perfect opportunity to have a wellness program. It was National Donut Day, right? So we could have given out donuts and talked about wellness.
So I don't think you're being serious there. Maybe carrot sticks on National Donut Day?
And this, you also got Rib Fest this weekend going on.
We had some very nice food in here this week. But I don't think it contributed. Maybe it did contribute to the 80%. Another key is to sort of initiate it incrementally, right? Not try to do everything at once.
Yeah, I mean, big bang never works. No one likes to drink from a fire hose. So the whole idea of, you know, you introduce a concept, you do a lot of education. Scare tactics don't work either, right? You look at a side of a pack of cigarettes, that warning's been on there
forever,
but people still smoke cigarettes.
I guess the thing, my point with the cigarette was the example. I mean, I don't know. Do they charge people if you're overweight? They wouldn't charge you more for insurance, right?
No, but state of Michigan, you can discriminate on hiring if someone smokes now.
Okay.
So there is some more wellness.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. You can ask that question during the interview process. Do you smoke? And if the answer is yes, you can actually discriminate based on people that have smoked.
Ah, that's amazing. That's shocking to me, frankly, because there are other health issues. Why couldn't you then say, well, you are morbidly obese. We don't have to hire you.
Well, that would be one of the things that, you know, one of the taboo things,
right? Well, what's the difference?
Because there's a direct correlation between smoking cigarettes, and you know the outcome of that's a high probability is going to be...
Okay, but if you're morbidly obese, I guess the difference is you can say you could quit smoking.
Right.
You can't necessarily lose weight.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a cop-out. That's fascinating. I want to hear more about that. Adam Oxtein, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks for having
me. I'll see you down at Blues Fest.
Absolutely.
All right.
Eating
some ribs. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Friday afternoon, 720 WGN. And hey, I hope you'll follow me on Twitter, at Steve Bertrand, or on Facebook, Steve Bertrand, or Steve Bertrand on books as well. I want to talk to Ian Scher from CNET.com. He joins us on a phone line now about some of the things going on in the digital world. Ian, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
It's been a while, and I understand you've got a bouncing bundle of joy at your house.
So I do. He was born happy and healthy on May 11th, and we're doing great.
Well, congratulations for that. Is that your first, Ian?
Yes.
Okay. Well, when's the next one coming, do you think?
The thank you, Mother. I appreciate that.
All right. Let's talk about, you know, the joke was, and it came out of an advertising campaign. I don't remember where, but the idea was, oh, hey, there's an app for that. There's an app for that. Well, I mean, everything is turning toward apps, right? Apple TV and all of this stuff. And I saw a projection on CNET to where they think the market will be worth $102 billion by the year 2020. That's twice what it is now, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of us look at smartphones these days and we think, oh, you know, it's pretty stayed in normal now, right? I mean, when we look at an upgrade for a phone, usually it's like, oh, it's a little faster and the camera's a little better. And a lot of the excitement that used to be around them has dissipated a little bit. But it turns out that people are buying apps at insane amounts. They're using these apps a lot. There are stuff like Candy Crush and Clash of Clans and, even people buying Netflix through their apps. All of this stuff is adding up to just an enormous amount of money. And it's really fascinating, especially if you think about when other countries are going to come online. You see people like rural China and in India starting to really come online and use phones and smartphones really for the first time. And it's just changing the way that all of this stuff works. And you see a lot of companies, even Apple, reorienting their business to make sure that they respond to this new customer demand.
I want to get to that.
All this is adding up to these apps.
Well, I want to get to that Apple thing in a sec, but I also remember reading not too long ago that people only use, they might have a lot of apps on their phone, but they usually only use, what, 4, 5, or 6. So how do those two things sort of gel?
Square up? Sure. Yeah. So part of it is that they buy the apps and they may dump them, right? So that's still money spent.
Right. You just want to sell them. That's right.
Right. So that's part of it. But the other part of it is that the apps that they are buying or downloading, a lot of them now are what we call free to play. So you get to download it for free, but then you may have to pay extra later down the line for special features or whatever. And so that is actually what's booming in the market. So it's worth noting about more than 70% of the sales in the App Store are to games. They're game-related, so it's Candy Crush and Clash of Clans and all of that. And so that money is really what's making the difference in terms of just boosting the overall App Store. So I may only download one game, but I may spend a boatload of money doing it.
I see. Okay, so let's take that knowledge then and go to Apple. You made reference earlier to the fact that they're sort of changing the way they deal with apps at their App Store.
Yeah, so the next thing that's going to happen is we're used to right now, let's say, we'll go with Candy Crush, right? If I download that game and I want to play it, at one point I may have to pay extra money if I want to be able to have power-ups and extra lives and all that stuff. Well, Apple is trying to come up with new ways to help people spend money on the App Store. And, of course, you think, well, they take enough money from me as it is. So what they're doing is that they're expanding this thing called subscriptions. So you think of subscriptions right now as Netflix and Hulu and whatever else that you might do. But now you may actually start paying for a subscription to a game, for example.
I would subscribe to Candy Crush. And then,
in theory, right?
In theory, sure.
But yeah.
Have access to it for maybe 6 months or something.
Or maybe what they'll do is they'll give you, if you pay a subscription price and you promise to be on for a year, they'll give you, X number more power-ups than you would get if you just paid them outright. And so these types of things are really fascinating. The software world is changing very dramatically because before the App Store in 2008, people almost never bought software. Like, what would happen is that I would get a computer, and whatever I bought when I bought the computer was pretty much it. That's statistically how it played out. And then the App Store came along, and suddenly people were buying software up the wazoo. All these apps were really popular, but there's still this problem where there are only a few developers who really make a lot of money. Everyone else really struggles to get by. So this subscription thing that they're doing, and Apple says that if you are able to get someone who's doing a subscription for a year, they'll lower the amount of money that they take out of the developer's pocket, so that's even better, that all this stuff might change the way that we interact with these apps. And a lot of people hate this in-app purchase thing. Like, a lot of people respond to it and say, I hate having to pay extra money for Candy Crush.
Right.
And so this might actually be able to soften that feeling if I just pay a little bit of money every month and I get to play it as much as I want. So it'll be really fascinating to see how it plays out.
Yeah, well, it will watch that because it's certainly not going to mean less money going to Apple and the app creators. It'll be more of your money, but they're just going to find another way to take it.
Essentially, right? And maybe more people will finally pay. I mean, right now only a small percentage of people, like 4 or 5%, ever really pay for these in-app purchases. So it could make a real difference.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think. I don't know that I pay for any. I must pay for a couple of things.
I'm sure you paid for one.
Which one is that?
I don't know, but I'm sure you paid for one. Everyone had something where they finally relented and they said, okay, fine, I'll pay the 99 cents.
You're right. I'm sure I did pay for one. All right, let's go to the Worldwide Developers Conference because that sort of dovetails into this. That starts next week where Apple's going to talk about any new developments. Now, they're not expecting anything about hardware here, right? Is this going to be all about Siri?
Primarily, yes. So the first off, you know, Apple has this developers conference every year. It's going to be next week. CNET's going to have a ton of people there and covering every square inch of it, so you can find out all of that on our site. But a lot of what they're going to be talking about is not like a new phone, but it's really going to be about the software inside of it. So one of the popular things been going on lately is that everyone is getting into the voice assistant thing. Apple really popularized it back in 2011 when they announced the iPhone 4S. And Siri, and now you've got everyone and their mothers doing it. Microsoft's doing it, Amazon's doing it, and Google's doing it. So now we see Apple kind of really starting to push up and what they're going to do. So there's a lot of rumors about how Siri's going to get a lot better. One of the things that they're talking about a lot is home automation, which has become a huge trend in the industry, even though there are some security concerns, but never mind. And there's even a possibility that Apple will debut a competitor device to what's called the Amazon Echo. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but
it's
a really
weird
cylindrical thing.
Is that Alexa?
Yeah, the Alexa. So where it sits in your home, and it's this big, you know, monolithic cylinder, and you talk to it. You say, Alexa, this or that, right? Alexa, tell me a joke. And it'll do things, and it actually connects with your home, so you can tell it to turn on the lights, turn off the lights. It's really fascinating stuff. It's become a surprise hit for Amazon. And so now Apple, and we have sources that we've talked to who say that Apple's preparing to do its own competitor device to this. And, you know, it's worth noting, Apple is usually, you know, not the first company to come out with a new technology, but they tend to do it right, and they get a lot of people's attention in it. So it's going to be really fascinating to see how they do this.
All right,
we're also likely to see new software for your phones and all of that, and you'll find out what's coming down, later in the year that might change the way that you interact with your phone and tablet.
I'm sure we'll get an update on that next week. We've got a minute left, and I want you to explain to everyone out there listening why Netflix is bad for their sex life.
So what it's really fascinating, right? Who would have thought? So what happened is that there was a study done that said that right now, in 1990, couples were reporting having sex 5 times a month, and now it's down to 3 times, and by 2030, it could go down to none at all. I doubt that'll happen, but it'll go down really low.
It would be really bad for all of us.
The researchers, they were asking why, and the researchers said, well, you know, statisticians will say they don't know, but a lot of the researchers mentioned the word iPad, and they think that Netflix and HBO and all this binge-watching we're doing might actually have an impact on it. Now, you've heard Netflix and Chill, which is you should look that up on the internet. But apparently now that's actually impacting our sex life.
So The Walking Dead, a whole new meaning for the term Walking
exactly,
Dead.
Exactly, right. There are many jokes we could go down on this road.
Oh, go ahead. Give me some. I'll wait for you.
I don't know if they're exactly right for the radio.
Hey, it's great to talk to you again. I look forward to the next time. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion. Steve Bertrand here. We're winding down the Business Lunch on this Friday afternoon. Before we go, I want to tell you, though, you know, we were advertising and publicizing a trip to Ireland that I'm going to host. It's coming up next October, and it sold out in 3 weeks, sold out record time. We couldn't add another trip for this year just because of the scheduling, but we've added a trip for next April. It'll leave April 19th. It's 9 days, just under $3,000, a lot like the one that went in October. So a lot of the people on the waiting list are signing up for the trip next April, and we've certainly got room for you as well if you want to look. It's not on the WGN website yet, but it is at SteveBertrandTravel.com, or you can call me and I'll get you all the information at 847-606-6065. All right, that housekeeping put to rest. Andrew Caravella is in the studio from Sprout Social. Adam, Andrew, what should I call it? Welcome to the
whatever you'd like.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
What is Sprout Social?
Yeah, so Sprout Social is a social media management software. We're based here in Chicago. We started about 5-6 years ago, and it's really a software, a web-based platform, and also app-based platform that businesses use to manage the different social networks collectively from one place. So if you think about Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and all these networks that businesses are now using to manage their brand presences and to have conversations with customers and community, our app sort of brings that all into one place for people to use and make life better.
I'm thinking like Social News Desk. Is that the same sort of thing? Do you know what
similar.
That is?
Similar. I mean, there's,
so
there's...
we use, just so people know, we use Social News Desk mm-hmm. here when we mm-hmm. want to, from the newsroom, tweet something out, post it on Facebook. It's, we go to one spot and then can put it out. Is that what you guys do?
Very similar, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And how does a business, you know, social media is one of those things I think that we all talk about, we all think we understand, and then when you get down into the weeds, we really don't, right? What do you think is the biggest misconception a small business owner has when it comes to social media?
Well, I think that's a very good point. I think you're right. I think a lot of times so many of us use social and do social personally.
It's like, I can do that.
Yeah, it's I got it, right? But at the end of the day, if you really think about the business applications behind it, right, it's about building your brand. It's about sort of the broadcast, the promotional aspects of things and having platforms and networks to do that. And then on the other side, it's about, you know, inbound conversations. People are talking to your brand and your business, and they're tweeting at you, they're writing your Facebook wall, doing so many things that are more about two-way dialogue,
right,
that I think understanding the scope and the scale of what that means and how you as a business, you know, no matter your size and scope of business, you've got to think about how you do that and what that takes.
You know, it used to be a guy could open up a sandwich shop, and if he had good sandwiches, people would come by and they'd see the sign on the door, but now you got to do much more than just make sandwiches.
Yeah, I mean, it's about not only offering whatever products and services that you've got, but it's also about maintaining sort of that idea of a community and bringing your customers into the fold. So whether that's, you know, a lot of times I think one of the mistakes people can make around social is they're too promotional, right? They're just throwing out content around, you know, sales and promotions and their products and buy this and do that. And a lot of what people I think want on social, because it's, again, inherent to how they behave with their friends and their family, is thinking more about, okay, what can you do that's educational or that's informative or that sort of brings your customers into the fold through conversation.
So you want to nurture them as well.
Absolutely.
In a way.
Absolutely. I think that's huge. And that takes time, right? I think a lot of, you know, a few years ago as sort of more businesses took to social as a channel, right? And I think it's important to stop and take a minute and say that, you know, it's not just a marketing tactic, right? Social is a channel that businesses have at their disposal now. So like email, like phone, like in person, all that stuff, that matters. And then thinking about how you actually use that, you know, to your advantage and to bring in people into your community.
So is the social media department in the marketing department, or how do they fit there?
That's a really interesting question, and I think we're seeing some changes in that. There's a natural tendency for social media to be owned by people in a marketing department or a communications team, things like that. But what we're seeing, especially on the customer service front, is pretty remarkable that people are taking to social to ask questions, to get issues resolved. They have, you know, you got a wrong food order or a delayed flight, all these kinds of activities that happen that irk people where they need a response.
That gets back to the nurture thing, right?
Absolutely.
So if you've got only salesmen dealing with your social media, they're not going to be equipped to respond to someone who wants their handheld or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. So we're seeing a lot of businesses, certainly that use Sprout, but even just in general, that are actually training their customer support teams to be, you know, active on social and to help that management process. So they maybe got the marketing teams that are focused on, you know, promotional, creative content, you know, reinforcing the brand elements. But then they've got customer support reps who are, you know, just like they're in live chat and email and on the phone, they're also on social and they're having those questions. Because if you think about it, they're the ones that know the details, right?
Right,
they know the ins and outs of your product, or they know all the data that needs to be able to resolve an issue or things like that. So I think that's something that we're seeing a lot more of, which I think is pretty fascinating.
Andrew Caravella from Sprout Social. We've got a lot to talk about. Hopefully we'll do it again sometime.
I would love to. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.